going to obviously talk about the same topic, but focusing on blood, as several of my colleagues on the panel have focused on this, because we are all recipients of NIOSH funding that was related to an RFA that went out specific to blood exposure. I didn't bother naming all of the people that are involved in this project, but I want to identify, and actually Paxton Barker, Barbara Scharf, Barbara Brady is still here, Kate McFall, and I think Shockey's there. Thank you. And anyway, half of the room, so I really appreciate the others that weren't responsible for being here. And then the way I wrote this abstract was actually to highlight the fact that we wrote Earl Dotter, the photojournalist, into the grant. And so I actually thought that given I was on a panel with people that were doing similar work, what might be interesting was to see some of his photos. So anyway, he's the only person that gets named on the cover slide. But this project is a partnership not only of individuals but organizations. And so you can see that in addition to the University of Illinois and the University of Maryland colleagues, we've been working with two SEIU locals. The data that I'm going to share with you are from Local 880 SEIU in Chicago, and that's been the major labor partner. And then we started the project without a formal industry partner, which was something that I initially delighted in, so that we didn't have to do this sort of tripartite stuff that we have to do in other projects. But we had a very high road, desirable agency partner that we started to work with, Addis Home Care, which is based in Palatine, Illinois. And so they are a formal partner in this work. And then the Academy for Educational Development here in Washington, D.C., Joy Pritchett, worked with us on the training part of an intervention. So anyway, this is a photo of some members of the team and a lot of the worker trainers. And one thing I'm seeing that is also similar across these presentations are the purple and yellow, which were on Linda's slides. And also, Pia, I noticed that your slides were purple and yellow, too, which to many of us means SEIU. I am sorry, Jackie, I didn't know that. How could that be? The yellow. Not the purple and yellow. Oh, okay, right, purple and yellow, yeah. Anyway, this is a project that has four aims. What I'm going to show you today is just a piece from the first aim, and that is to compare and contrast the blood exposure, not the available hazard controls, among two study populations. And we were very excited about this opportunity to do this work because of the work that our colleagues at the University of Illinois in Chicago were doing with Local 880, and actually the work that Linda Delft and Carlos were doing with 434B, and our concern about that segment of the home care population that is invisible in many ways, but also from protection by the few occupational health standards that are out there. So one of our interests was to actually compare the risk among these two job titles, because obviously the blood exposure among RNs is well recognized and protected to, those workers are protected to a certain extent. And the non-healthcare, non-medical personal care assistants, which is the term we use, they don't receive protection under the bloodborne pathogen standard for the most part. So these are the other aims. These two surveys that I'm going to report some preliminary findings from are the Time 1 surveys for intervention study, which we're engaged in. So here is the very complex study design. The two circles in the red are what I'm going to be reporting on. We did a survey of all RNs in the state of Maryland who who indicated on their nurse licensure application that they worked in home care, which is actually not a very good list. And then we have the luxury of administering a survey to nearly 1,000 personal care assistants that are required to do in-person training in Illinois on a quarterly basis. And we did the survey and then began the intervention immediately following this Time 1 survey. So the a little bit about the survey methods. We had an 8-page survey that went to the RNs and the personal care assistants, but some of the questions were comparable because we did want to do this comparison across the two groups, but obviously we needed to craft different wording for the two populations based on their activities and their knowledge of medical activities. So this survey that was administered was based on focus group generated questions about the context of work, and then one of my colleagues who isn't here in the audience, Jeff Johnson, is a work stress expert, and he actually is a big proponent of using the COPSAC, which is the Copenhagen Psychosocial Questionnaire modules. And so that was the basis of our work organization questions, and then the blood questions came from an amalgam of work that my colleague Allison Trinkoff has done around registered nurses and EpiNet and others. The mode of administration was different. The RNs completed a mailed survey. We had a less than stellar response rate despite using Dillman's technique, which yielded a higher response rate in other work we've done with RNs. And we think that part of the reason why the response rate didn't even reach 50% was because our target population, our sampling frame, included a lot of nurses that actually had never worked in home care. And so we don't know if they chose not to respond to it because of that, and so therefore we had to include them in the denominator unless they indicated that that's why they were not responding. But we had a great response rate from the personal care assistants, obviously. This is just a real quick overview of the study population. The percentage in the parentheses represents the comparison to the RN. So, you know, primarily female, 70% African-American among the personal care assistants in Chicago, and smaller, much less diversity among the RNs, comparable to Pia's work. I think, yeah, it's interesting. Their time in home care is pretty comparable. And very interesting to us was, we heard this both in the focus groups and in the survey, that even though these individuals do not have any requirements for certification or training, there are CNAs that are working below their job requirements because they prefer home care to nursing homes where they used to work. And unlike Linda, there's a smaller percentage, but in Illinois, PCAs can care for family members. So these are the percentages of personal care assistants that were involved in activities which potentially expose them to blood. So, and then I'll show you the injuries related to these exposures. But by contrast, RNs are part of their practice is obviously to work with needles, and so they have different types of activities and exposures and higher levels of those that involve exposure to blood. Here are some, these don't project very well. These are some of Earl's photos. He spent 2 days with a personal care assistant in Chicago and basically shadowed her for her entire workday. And we have hundreds of slides, but Earl was nice enough to create 2 6-minute slideshows. And the University of Illinois Chicago Shockey is in the process of having the personal care assistant, Muriel, do the voiceover. and that'll be available, and is really a quality piece, as one would expect. But anyway, this is just one slide from it. This is a personal care assistant, which just gives you a sense of where the blood exposure might be coming from. This is Muriel. She obviously is a patient that has a colostomy. Dirty linen with potential exposure to blood and needles. This is a photo actually from Maryland, but a glucometer, which patients and family members use to test their blood sugar. And this is, we don't show up well, but this is actually the foot, ulcerated foot of a client, and the person who happens to actually be cleaning them is a family member, not a paid family member. But again, it just gives you a sense of the kind of care that these individuals are providing. And, you know, they say that there it's not within their scope of practice to do medical treatments, but by default they are. We also did look at personal protective equipment. Even though both PCAs, personal care assistants, and RNs both used gloves for the most part, the personal care assistants were often providing them for themselves or for their clients. 5% of PCAs reported using sharps containers overall, and many of them didn't have the need to use them. And again, by contrast, 88% of them, of the RNs, actually reported using containers that were supplied by their employer. We're very interested in the sharps disposal, exposures relating to sharps disposal. So here, 7% of these personal care assistants that aren't supposed to be dealing with sharps reported disposing of them during a typical day. A quarter of the homes that need sharps containers don't have them. Nearly three quarters of the personal care assistants reported that they then take these sharps containers and just throw them in the trash. And those who didn't, 13% of those who had clients that had sharps but didn't have containers just throw the sharps directly into the trash. And some photographs. This is the nurse, so in the event that you do have a sharps container, often you're carrying it with you in your car and in your bag. So the next and final couple of slides actually show the injury rate. So among this 1,000 personal care assistants, 3% reported last year sharps-related injuries. About 40% of them actually stated that they were using the lancet or the needle at the time of the injury, and about 20% got stuck in the process of disposing of it. By contrast, or actually about the same percentage overall, had exposure to non-intact skin, and these were the activities that they were engaging in at the time that they had this exposure. So this is simple slide. It's taken a lot of person hours, and it's something we'd like to have a discussion of. I mean, we have heard the discussions about what's the best denominator in healthcare in general, but when it comes to home care, it is really hard, and we thought about this when we wrote the survey, and the best denominator and the one that we're presenting here is to actually look at the field hours per year. I mean, given many of these folks work very part-time, we recognize the need to actually calculate the number of hours they use within the denominator. And because the RNs as a group don't spend as many of their hours in the field as they're paid for, we actually have a fairly conservative estimate of the denominator for the RN, because we only here use their field hours with in the field as opposed to in the office in the car doing notes. Yeah. So we asked about how many of those hours that they reported working per week were spent in the field. And we've got case managers, we've got actually a number of RNs who actually don't spend that much time in the field themselves, aren't doing direct care. So we, in fact, we're going to calculate it both ways, but this is what we think is the best estimate. So basically, we've you've got this group that's not receiving the protection from the Safe Needle Stick Act, who have what I consider to be an important risk on the job, and it's, you know, about a quarter that of RNs. So, in summary, and for the purpose of discussions, now CDC requires that infants and folks in school have the HPV vaccine. This is what the Bloodborne Pathogen Standard says about who it applies to, and our question is, well, what about this huge group of workers, recognizing that there's not a lot of money in the system, and where we're at in terms of the policy discussions with policymakers in Illinois is that we really need to put together some criteria for the types of clients that one is caring for, which then would trigger some kinds of special protection and the HPV vaccine.
Thank you. There's Muriel.